Tacky Talk time, folks. State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is joining us for our first Tacky Talk of April 2024. Tacky, did you survive April Fool's Day?
I have managed April Fool's Day. Welcome to Tacky Tuesdays, I suppose we're going to call this.
That's right. Instead of Tuesdays with Maury, it's Tuesdays with Tacky.
I should make you all some tacos. Survive April Fool's. Kudos to Senator John Keenan for his April Fool's video of the year. I greatly admire his guts in putting something out in April Fool's as an elected official, because people take us far, far too seriously, I have to be frank, regarding anything we say. A lot of the stuff we say is opinion, but at the same time, you can have a little fun, as John did, regarding defining what a donut is in Massachusetts.
I saw that. He wanted to like ban Starbucks or something, I think.
Yes, it's like the pro Dunkin's video on banning Starbucks and basically seize its property by eminent domain and throwing it in the harbor and all that stuff. I give John a lot of credit. That was really funny. And
yeah, he did a good job.
If you haven't seen it yet on X, you should. Remind everybody, as I often do, we're human as everybody else. And, there's nothing that says we can't take advantage of, innocent, fun, good-natured humor on July. I'm sorry, July's a different issue. On April 1st, yesterday. So, I do recommend people checking it out on John Keenan's X account. Enjoy a good laugh as much as everybody else. It's like a Christmas carols during the holidays, where several news stations will do short videos of clips of people singing a song, various electeds around the state singing songs. So again, we're as human as everybody else, and we're flawed, but we also sometimes know something, and why can't we have a little fun?
You can. You absolutely can. And the nice thing is now with social media, anybody can. So you can always add to your own version if you'd like.
But the beautiful thing about John's video is the more serious he got, the funnier he got.
If you know John, exactly. That's why it was so funny. Because he's usually a very serious kind of guy.
Oh, he owes a lot of restraint on his side. You get as serious as possible. So, again, much kudos to John on a fun day yesterday, a little clip.
Yeah. Nothing from you, though, Tacky.
No, I'm not that funny, as you'll hear from me and Joe here as we do our little Abbott Costello routine. We can take a guess who's the straight man every week. It's up to you to decide. But I was never much of an April Fool's prankster. I'm good in the zinger every so often. However, to put together an elaborate prank is a little beyond me.
Yeah. So we're in the new month of April now. We're getting closer and closer to the end of the budget season.
Yeah, I mean, the crescendo is starting to rise. Meeting requests have, not surprisingly, increased. And the advocates have now started putting constituent emails into my email box as they activate their advocate machine on for or against an issue. Tomorrow, we're in formal session. We believe we're going to do Chapter 90 funding this time of year. We actually will issue a bond bill, probably about $200 million, plus another maybe 40 or 60, depending on how much space we have in terms of bond tolerance for local bridge and road work, not state, local. This is basically free money where the state adopts the bond cost to local communities. Quincy, being one of the larger communities, is actually a very big beneficiary of the Chapter 90 bond bill. And once I actually have a solid number, we can talk about that next week. But we also have been putting in several tens of millions of dollars, depending on how much we can afford, for what we refer to shovel-ready/emergency work. This was a request from City of Town, City of Paul Patrick administration. Yeah, we're going back in time here, so yeah, I can remember a couple of things, where they asked for an emergency fund on the side where they have unexpected costs and certain shovel-ready projects that have been languishing a bit on the local level. So that's what we're thinking is going to happen. Of course, we live in a world of speculation and gossip. It's kind of the nature of the state house. But under all indications to me, as we're doing Chapter 9 tomorrow, next week, the House budget is released. We're going to talk about that next week from Committee on Ways and Means. They're going to make a recommendation. Again, it is a recommendation, subject to floor debate and approval by the members. And of course, about 1,200 amendments are going to be filed. And we've talked about this multiple times. It's going to be a lean budget. So, I'm not expecting a whole lot of intricate surprises. What will be interesting is how much of the governor's proposal survived the House Ways and Means recommendation. This includes things like low-income fares for the MBTA. Now, she intends to fund this through taxpayer dollars. Obviously, we'll see if something like that, for example, makes the final cut.
Yeah, I think she was requesting $45 million for the first year of that program.
Yeah, it's a pilot program. But as I like to say, once you provide a benefit to the public, it's hard to take it away. So we tend to proceed with caution. And as I say again, we're kind of revising estimates down for the fiscal cycles, this cycle and next cycle. April returns, again, is critical for our estimates. 40% of our revenue comes in the second half of the year, especially the last couple of months, we're actually like 45%. But 40-45% revenue second half of the fiscal year, the vast majority of it shows up in 1 month in April.
Yeah, it's so I think April 17th is the deadline this year for tax returns.
Yeah, Patriots Day is in a weird spot.
Yeah.
So we have to, after Patriots Day, plus in Washington, D.C., they have Emancipation Day.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah.
So it is a public holiday. And since the IRS is based in Washington, D.C., they follow the public holidays in Washington, D.C. regarding collection. So I believe Emancipation Day is the 16th.
That's right. It's Tuesday. Yeah.
Yeah, so you have a weird kind of long weekend to get your tax return just done. Again, I don't recommend you wait to the last minute. If you're mailing something, obviously you got to give time for the mail to arrive. It's those of you that have been kind of guessing when your bills get, because I still mail my bills. I've not gone to digital payment for whatever reason. I can't shake this practice I've done since I was a teenager. I should modernize my way of paying my bills, but I just can't seem to shake the habit. But I mean, I have been filing my taxes electronically. I like to do it that way, particularly if you're going to get a refund. It can be a little bit of a cost of using TurboTax, but the Department of Revenue actually has also its online system. So if you want a TurboTax or use H&R Block or whatever, a software for your federal taxes and file for free, many of them will do that for you. You can actually go to the Department of Revenue website and they have an opportunity to file your estate taxes electronically for free.
Yep. And many times the cost of the software can be deducted, at least I think from your federal taxes.
That's correct. Your tax preparation, if you qualify, well, if your total Schedule A deductions exceed the standard deduction, you can get a greater deduction because you're bigger than the standard deduction, which includes tax preparation, includes the software. So something to keep in mind, hold on to those receipts, obviously, for a couple of years. But if you're looking to, if you have a big enough situation, you're looking to add to your deductions, yeah. Put on your Quicken, H&R Block, or if you use a accountant or tax service, make sure you get a receipt from them when you pay your accountant or tax service, and you can add that to your deduction, or tell them to add it to deduction if they forget when you double check your paperwork.
Yeah.
So, there's good opportunities to do that.
Yeah. But local aid tax, Tacky, mayor here in Quincy was complaining about the small increase he said the city is getting for the schools and for unrestricted aid. I think he said like three only a 300,000 increase on the school side and a 700,000 on the unrestricted aid side. Does that sound right?
But the Chapter 70 money is a formula based on more of a real accuracy of what your school system looks like today. And
Yeah.
that has a lot of different factors, including a separate factor away from the Chapter 70 formula itself regarding low-income students and the investment per pupil minimum cost. So the Chapter 70 formula for every community will slightly change every year, but I also like to remind folks that once we implemented the Chapter 70 formula, if I remember correctly, we went from essentially $28 million to almost $34 million. So,
Right.
$7+ million for each year for the last 2 years. I think last year was almost 10 million.
That sounds right. Yeah.
So, I mean, 17 million-ish dollars, give or take a little bit, for the last 2 years, is a giant chunk of change for the city, which budget is approximately what, just under $400 million now.
Yes.
I looked at the Quincy Sun cover. I haven't had a chance to open
Yeah.
the second
No,
page.
that's about right. It was like 362 last fiscal year, so that sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah, you throw in local aid that, and the unrestricted local aid, which is taxpayer money given for free, plus the lottery money. Last couple of cycles, it was about 35-ish million dollars. So, of your $40 million, 10%, not quite 10%, but $40 million under just under $4 million, give or take, is state local aid. So, give you an idea exactly how much the state is participating in the budget, not including things like cultural council grants, the library assistance funding, the council aging money, school breakfast money, which is our state money. Your taxpayer money goes to school breakfast and school lunches, which is not a cost taken up. We help pay for different public health issues in the local level. And of course, a number of different grant programs, both not-for-profits and the state, to the city. For example, the hazmat equipment and training for the Boston Fire, like Boston Quincy firefighters. As you can tell, I'm kind of slurring my words, but Quincy firefighters are, has a hazmat program paid by the state. So, Speaker Mariano has been championing those funds for many, many years. So, there's a lot of costs, and I know it's not election years for the locals, but it's election year for us. And I don't disagree that that the aid formula for Chapter 70, is now being adjusted based on real costs of the schools. But keep in mind, I mean, they kind of neglected the generosity of the formula prior. And then Chapter 7 lottery money is based on projections of how much revenue is coming in. So if our revenue projections aren't that great, there's going to be a trickle-down effect to the local level. So, belt tightening is going to be going all around to all municipalities as well as the state as we try to, move back to core services. And I can't speak for the city's priorities, but, I fully expect Ways and Means to very much belt tighten back to core services. And then try to figure out from there what is, considered not a core service, and see what the appetite is to see if how generous or not, in different parts of it. So, I respect the city and the challenges they have regarding putting together a budget. At the same time, I remind folks that the state has been very generous when times are good, including a whole lot of ARPA money,
I was
and
just going to say, a lot of that the pandemic era funding is now gone, right?
that's correct. Our pandemic money be totally consumed at the end of the year, because it's already been dispersed. And it's actually kind of unfortunate. I got a list from ANF, Administration and Finance Office, sent to the legislature every member regarding assistance in contacting certain agencies and municipalities who have not responded to Administration and Finance's form for funds. They just don't hand you a check. You actually have to fill out a form to the state to get your money that we've allocated to you, whether it be as ARPA money or state earmarks or targeted grant funds. You actually have to like sign for it. It's just like, here, hand you a check, right? You actually have to sign off on receipt. And this includes capital projects too. For example, let's say there's like, 10 grand for a sidewalk, just to make a random example, right? You still have to sign, the city or town has to still sign off at that 10 grand. So, there's a lot of paper involved on certain projects at the at our level, but most municipalities hopefully not do it. Not-for-profits, maybe less so. They're not used to being part of the state recipients. They may not know how to do it, and there's some barriers regarding how to fill the forms. But I can tell right now, state agencies are eager to be helpful on things like this. All they have to do
Yeah,
is
and
call.
last I checked, Quincy hadn't done that yet.
Yeah, I mean, they should have at this point. But
Yeah,
yeah, and that's something I asked them, not me. I did see
no,
it.
I'm definitely going to. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, you see Councilor DeBoda last time. So you had the council president on, I saw on April 1st your podcast. So, these are things to ask the local folks. I've done my part. But we like accountability. We don't know we want it's like COD, cash and delivery, right? We want you to sign off, on receipt. So
Well, there needs to be a paper trail, absolutely, for to be transparent.
well, I have a couple of funny stories which we can save for a different day regarding misdone paperwork by a couple of towns, which well, not a couple, actually one specific town, which I won't name right now. The way it worked for Michael Morrissey, we had to get to a mystery of a missigned document. When I was in the Senate, it became like a 1 week chase for me to find these documents. This was before email. I mean, I was getting stuff faxed into the office, not emails. And this whole paper hunt on some errant documents from one of the town's Michael had represented at the time in the Senate. So, I won't say I'm an expert at all, but I am familiar there is accountability process. So, I mean, let's see how the city budget rolls along. This end, it's belt tightening all around, and like us, we make hard choices. The city make hard choices. There's consequences for making hard choices.
We should probably talk a little bit about the funding for the migrant shelters and that the House versus the Senate versions of those bills and the differences.
Well, speaking of ARPA money, we have been using ARPA money to address the migrant crisis for pretty much all this fiscal year. Almost no taxpayer dollars from the state level has gone to migrant crisis. It's been all back for ARPA money. As I said before, Charlie Baker hid $2 billion from us. We've been trying to claw our way through the paperwork to find it all, and we did. So, that's kind of the thing that's been back filling the migrant issue. We'll see how it goes. I mean, there's no sign of it stopping. We have no predictability how this is going to go. And, the idea of children sleeping in the street is unacceptable. Again, this applies to pregnant women and young families of young children. It's not single males that are taking advantage of this program. So this applies to any person that comes to the state. That includes local residents. And the job is to ensure that everybody's able to get helped, even though there's a cap on it. But at the same time, despite the cap, migrants are being temporarily housed any way they can with the state. And it's become a kind of an interesting issue on what this cap looks like, which, to be honest with you, the administration can't explain to us. Leader Alice Paish, in the House and the Speaker's leadership team has been charged as the point person to try to get to the bottom of this. And no, she has the equal frustrations we have because she, of course, works for us essentially, the House members, charged by the Speaker to tell us what's going on. And, she's found this rather frustrating experience as well.
It's, I mean, they're in hotels, they're in motels, they're in private residences in some cases, dispersed all over the state.
That's absolutely true. And there's also added costs, which we have accounted for this fiscal cycle, and we're going to have to account for next fiscal cycle regarding influx of residents, particularly children using school systems.
So, and the speaker, as we're speaking here, Tacky, the speaker's in the other studio doing a program on this topic, actually. And I did poke my head in and heard him say, this year's budget is pretty much set when it comes to this crisis. But for the next fiscal year, he's anticipating maybe $1 billion just to deal with this.
That is the number that's floating around right now. As I remind folks, it's not a new experience having a shelter crisis reach close to $1 billion. The problem was that we never had $1 billion happen in one fiscal cycle. We've had it happen over multiple fiscal cycles, as, for example, the foreclosure crisis got worse and worse after the fiscal financial crash in 2009. It takes time for that crash to catch up regarding basic foreclosures. Remember all those homes in all our neighborhoods that were kind of abandoned, people just walked away from them and it turned into like decrepit.
Yeah, they were all upside down in their mortgages, so they just put the keys on the table and walked away.
Remember that, guys? I mean, this happened in Quincy too. I mean, I remember, actually when I was knocking doors in 2010, I, saw more than a few properties like that. I was rather surprised. Particularly this city and even some of the middle class, okay neighborhoods here, the people were doing that. People had this misconception that this happened in poor places, so to speak, right? That's not true. It was a widespread issue, regardless of affluency or non-affluency. So, eventually, the shelter crisis had reached a crescendo ourselves, and that took like 5 years, really, to get to a crescendo. This is a crescendo today, and that's why I keep reminding folks we've done this before. We just never done it this way.
Right, this fast, exactly. What could be some other revenue sources do you think that could generate the ability to fill that gap?
Well, we don't have too many options really on the table. I mean, online lottery has something that's been battered about again. As you all know, I'm not wicked warm to online lottery, but I do think online is inevitability, particularly with sports betting already in play. You have casinos in the state. Obviously, taxing is not a favorable item by anyone, and nobody likes to hear the three-letter word with T. So we obviously would like to avoid that if possible, and I suspect we will. I just have a hard time seeing the speaker saying, "Let's put down some taxes." I just have a time seeing it. The reality is that there really is no real strong options remaining on revenue generation. All types of business revenues have been tapped out in that sense. And of course, you have the millionaire's tax that's already kicked in. And it's unpredictable because it's so new. And capital gains doesn't matter because it goes to the rainy day fund. So, we have an $8.2 billion rainy day fund we could draw from. So I do think we can get through several fiscal cycles keeping core services intact. But just because of a big rainy day fund, you can't drain it all around. I mean, just like every household, you're gonna belt tighten first, retreat to your essential needs, essential payments, and then you start drawing down from rainy day. And that's the philosophy we have.
Right. God forbid there's another pandemic or Snowmageddon or whatever.
Or terrorist attack, I'm sorry to say. I mean, no one expected the Boston bombing. Unfortunately, we were, it's okay. I don't want to say it was great fiscal years. I mean, we were still in the financial crisis of 08. It took 5, 6 years to get out of it. But you had rainy day funds available still to, put some money in. And we did that in a informal session the week of the bombing to put money available right away for police overtime immediately. We can draw on rainy day funds here and there to make it work. And we also allowed we're going to be allowing the governor, as soon as the House of Senate reaches a agreement, to allow the governor to draw on the interest from the day fund, not the principal, just the interest, under certain conditions. There are caps and controls to use that money to leverage the massive infrastructure money that's going to be coming to the state to help pay for our share of it. If you're ready to go, the feds are going to give you the money, right? So that's another potential offset in the sense of revenue sources and bonding that we can use to keep the bond debt down and not use taxpayer dollars for well, not taxpayer dollars in the sense of income tax dollars, but interest generated from the rainy day fund to help with that. But it isn't a permanent solution in the sense of the fact that it is such a big gap. So again, it's a lot of little pieces together. And maybe some of the governor's initiatives don't become part of the budget. We just decide that it's just too expensive or it's not the right time. Again, you can kind of get sense, I hope, from what I'm talking about. It's a lot of moving parts. It's not like here's one solution to solve all your problems. It's trying to kind of patchwork a bunch of different solutions.
And like you say, it's gonna take time to play out. And I think the bigger picture hope is that the migrants that are coming, that go through the system and get jobs, contribute back to the economy.
Well, that is the work we're doing now. I mean, the governor's office, has been making a strong effort, and we've, acquired some lawyers, like I talked in past shows, as part of our appropriation process, the governor's office to, help with work permits. And we have various not-for-profits groups around the state that are already stretched out because they're helping in the refugee crisis too. And it's a lot of moving parts. I mean, there are Afghans, there are Ukrainians, there are Haitians. There are Bhutanese. There are a lot of actually other refugees that you've never seen or heard about living in Quincy. But other communities also manage that issue on top of the migrant crisis as well. I mean, the state's actually, believe it or not, very welcoming to foreigners. I mean, it's not like immigrants are not welcomed here. It's just that we have a lot of different circumstances going on at the same time that's being borne by the state and local level. And the feds just walked away from us. So, it's we're cleaning up somebody else's mess, but it's people, and people we help people, and trying to figure out the best way to do it is not an easy thing to do.
Speaking of infrastructure, I don't know, did we talk last time about had the Baltimore Bridge tragedy occurred yet? I don't think we talked about that.
No, that happened over the weekend. Very rare I see this level of disaster. Yeah, and the tragedy of six folks, two bodies recovered. I'm not sure. I haven't checked later if they found the other four.
Not as of a couple hours ago.
Yeah, an amazing no more fatalities and injuries. And apparently, it was a fire on the ship. And supposedly, they had to cut off the engines because of the fire. The thing's kind of drifting. Point of perspective, I mean, this thing is this large barge fully loaded. And when that thing goes adrift, I mean, mass plus any kind of speed equals immense amount of force, right? So, yeah, but I mean, it just went down the middle of the bridge. It didn't hit like a support structure or something like that. And I just don't know what you could have done to, to have the ship do something else. I mean, but I mean, the question is, how did it get to that point where it was kind of loose in the water? I mean, for lack of a better term.
Basically, yeah. It was a runaway ship, basically, yeah.
Yeah, we've talked about supply chains and everything else, and this is kind of a variation of that. Route one is now being a diversion. So all your truck traffic and other stuff that truck traffic, transport, I mean, has to circle around the bridge, which adds time and fuel. And this also affects shipping traffic as the feds and the state, are trying to activate a port, another port nearby to unload cargo.
Yeah, I wonder if Boston will be part of that contingency plan.
I couldn't tell you right now. I mean, obviously, Everett and New Bedford are two big shipping ports. They may have to do diversions, which again, the reason ports are picked today where they're picked because again, they want efficiency of speed. Move stuff quickly. Again, time and fuel, two very important things to try to reduce as much fuel as possible and reduce time as possible. But I mean, it's going to not just affect cargo track, but traffic, but also moving stuff that are based on trucks.
Right.
I didn't realize this, but there's like a Domino sugar plant down there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's a main access point, as well as cars. A lot of cars go through
I
that
heard
area.
about the cars, yeah.
Yeah, so I was very surprised. I mean, I don't know anything about that port. Why would I? It's Maryland.
Right.
As I read this here and there, as I'm trying to read on my news feeds, yeah, this is going to be a big problem in the
Yeah.
Northeast.
Yeah, it's you know it, I mean, if somebody had wanted to take out a main shipping port, that would have been the ideal way to do it, if it was intentional. So hopefully it doesn't give anybody any ideas.
I love the conspiracy theories already starting regarding like, there's a, I saw someone send me a post that this is an AI error. The bridge has no AI to it. It's a,
No.
and the
Oh, the
ships.
bridge is over 50 years old. There was no AI when it was built.
Yeah. And then it's a ship. I mean, a mechanical failure has no AI component. So I'm kind of like, yeah, I love these rapidly rising conspiracy theories on a non-computerized bridge, essentially, because it's like it has an AI running that bridge. And, a cargo ship, essentially, and no amount of AI is going to stop that bridge, much less start a fire. It's not like the computer decided to light a bunch of matches next to some fuel. So, I mean, it's amazing how quickly, you do that. It's also amazing how people use their credentials, like former media people, people with questionable scientific credentials and questionable publications, will use that, as credibility for what they say on the internet.
Yeah, just check your sources, folks. Just know where you're getting your information and verify.
Yeah, and also like, use a little degree of common sense here. It's a
That's it.
50-foot bridge. There is no computer.
No, as a matter of fact, they had to put up physical blockades to stop the traffic from going over just minutes before it was collapsing.
Exactly. It also shows you the size of our infrastructure, right? The whole country touches each other. Every state touches each state. Every country around us, Mexico, Canada, touches the United States. And all the shipping comes in and out of and out of the and out of the country, also all touches each other. So, globalization, interstate commerce, our own regional trading bloc. I mean, we are integrated to each other. And the question a lot about whether or not this is going to slow down certain segments of supply chain locally, meaning this region, and whether or not it's going to result in some increased costs again associated with this region. And of course, there's an insurance company component, obviously, which I'm sure the insurers are trying to figure out what they're going to do here in terms of the recovery. And there's also safety. You got to get that fuel off the ship.
That too, yeah. There's a lot going on. There's all, and the cargo that's in those containers on the ship as well.
Yeah, and you've seen these cargoes in the news, and it's massive. You have these cranes pulling them off. So I really don't have an answer for you. Structural engineers, have to do this safely, considering the environmental hazards, as well as human safety, as well as don't want the bridge to keep coming down.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, lots to consider. So, yeah, and amazing to watch. Just to watch how it happened. It just couldn't have been more perfect in a tragic way.
Oh, absolutely. We're living a lot of bad news, and it contributes to people's moods, right? More bad news that's in the media, and people seem to be addicted to their social media as well as their standard news media on television. The more you feed bad news to people, the more it feeds a negative attitude.
We always talk about the economy here, and there's actually been still good news with the economy, at least the latest data showing pretty strong manufacturing data.
Yeah, manufacturing is strong. Consumer confidence is like a C minus, ain't
Yeah,
great.
that's about right. Yeah.
Consumer confidence is not great, but consumers are still spending a lot of money.
Yeah.
Production PCE, core index, is expected still under three, even though CPI is over three. Fuel prices are clearly going up because you notice gas prices are going up in Quincy, and you go to Boston, it really goes up. So it's about 315-ish, give or
So
take five.
yeah, it's a barrel of oil is now almost $85 a barrel, so it's gone up quite a bit.
Yeah, the Middle East impact is finally coming full steam in the Red Sea on the global fuel prices. And the GDP adjustments going back over 3%. Healthy US economy in terms of stable prices and wages is approximately 2%. So the economy is still running hot. Well, we're flying past $27 trillion in GDP. To put in perspective, pre-pandemic, it was sitting closer to $21 trillion.
Astounding. Yeah, think about that. That's 4 years, only in 4 years.
Yeah, we haven't seen this kind of growth since post-World War II.
Right.
As a result of super hard economy, it makes everything a bit more expensive, or a lot more expensive than what we're talking about in different sectors. And the country is non-uniform. So what happens in Massachusetts is the same in California, which isn't the same in Oklahoma, which isn't the same in Texas, which isn't the same in Wyoming.
Right.
So I mean, everywhere is different how they're feeling these impacts. But on a big number level, yeah, I mean, the world's strongest economy, biggest economy, continues to grow unusually quick the last 4 years. And there's this massive ripple effect. I'm not looking for the economy to drop dead at all. I am not, but getting it under 3%, closer to 2.5% would be fairly healthy for the economy to kind of ease ourselves into a more stagnated price structure.
Yeah, that's, I know that's what the Fed's looking for. So it's a question about what they're going to do with interest rates is still up in the air.
Yeah, agreed. The second biggest economy is China, between $17 and $18 trillion, depending whose math you use. And they're in a stagnated situation. I mean, they were approximately $17 trillion prior to the pandemic, and they're still trapped in that same zone, give or take, a few percentage points, depending on who you talk to. And again, they went on a highly regulated, controlled economic economy. They're not a free market economy in the way we do our free market economy. But meanwhile, countries like India, which had a very questionable COVID experience. If you paid attention to India's COVID experience, very, very messy. Has rocketed into the top 10 strongly in terms of its economy. So in Japan, has dropped to number four, despite the fact their economy is growing for the first time in 30 odd years. Germany has moved to the number three spot after China. And the Gulf is, almost $10 trillion from China down to Japan and Germany, give you an idea of the size differential. Being big matters in terms of population and resource rich. So even though the U.S. is a smaller population, I mean, we're resource rich, we're a free economy, we're a regulated economy, we're a pro-consumer economy, and it makes a difference. So yeah, good numbers all around on economic news, but people still feel pretty unhappy because prices are still high. People still feel pinched, and There's only bad news in the news, which also doesn't help.
Yeah, it's yeah, a lot of it is, you're right, emotion, true.
Yeah, people are exhausted. War in Ukraine, the tragedy and horrors of the Gaza-Israeli situation. You have if you really look around, I mean, you got massacres going on in Mirimir, and this crazy civil war still. I mean, domestically, there's another shooting. Seems like every other week, another type of mass shooting somewhere in this country. And of course, the presidential election is going to heat up to be quite a bit of, I won't name names, but just straight up name calling and lack of actual substance, which basically going to either people eat it up or they're going to be infuriated by, depending on where you are. Optics matters, and strong leadership generally means good optics and leadership, and people don't have confidence in the optics at the moment.
And the weather's still crummy too. It's on top of it all.
This has been a wacky, warm, cold with a lot of wind. This weekend's a classic example of a rainy, crappy Friday, followed by a windy Saturday, plus a sort of okay Sunday. We're going to have like a couple of nor'easters tomorrow, being Wednesday and Thursday, just to mess up our travel day in terms of work. For those of you who are going to work, we do have a formal session. I do have to show up. And we have 2 days full of meetings as well. So, it is a. That doesn't help our mood in New England, but as you can tell, I'm kind of conscientious of the effects on all our psyches, regarding the environment we live today, regarding everything from the weather, which is kind of like, we're New Englanders. I mean, we should be accepting that this is kind of how this works up here.
It's
But
true. Although we always hold out hope, I think, that it's going to get better.
you always hold out hope for a steady 5 days or something good, right? But also, again, I mean, real life things regarding your pocketbook and my pocketbook, and also, the impact on, all the media that's hitting us time, and it does affect you how you think. I mean, it really does. I mean, what you read, what triggers your emotions, appeals to different parts of who you are. And sometimes it's a good idea to take a deep breath, sit back, and really decide, was this really worth getting your hairs up?
Yeah, prioritize is always important for sure, and be grateful for the things that you do have and your family and your health.
Oh, I say this all the time. I mean, I'm very grateful to have the job I have. I'm very thankful to voters to let me have the job I have. And I have a lot of fun with this. Like, we can talk about the Korean consulate dinner next if you like, which was
I was
last
just
week.
going to ask you about that actually. Yeah, because I remember you went last week. Yeah.
Yeah, an example of something that was fun in terms of a changing stimuli conversation. The Asian caucus with Donna Wong and Trung Nguyen, Bernard Howard, Edgar Eindhoven, Roddy Mom, sat with the Consul General Kim, who's appointed less than 9 months now. He's actually Generation X. He's closer to my age. He was actually stationed in Boston as a very young attaché 25 odd years ago, and he's now living in his boss's house 25 years later.
Oh, wow. Talk about irony. Interesting.
Yeah, the house is assigned. The Koreans own the
I
property.
see.
Koreans
Gotcha.
own the property, right? So we talk about like Korea's putting $80 billion in investment in Massachusetts regarding R&D research, bringing their companies in and collaborating with other companies locally on biotech, on straight up hardware, software. They're developing flying cars is one of the locations. Boston's a research location for flying car tech. New fuel cell technology in a location in the global stage that the Koreans are investing in. The technology here, it is a Boston is safe in the sense that it's a geopolitically safe location. We have a good law regarding intellectual property rights, a highly educated state. We are still a state that does a lot of high-tech manufacturing. Very appealing for Korean industries to come down. The Korean president, Yoon, very impressed with Boston. We found out they had many choices of cities when he visited last April. His second stop was Boston. He would like to return to one more visit during his term of office. Korean presidents only get to serve 1 5-year term. There is no opportunity for a second term.
See.
So He's midway through his first term, and he would like to make a second visit, which of course creates a lot of pressure for the local consulate to make sure everything's perfect when the big boss shows up, right?
Right, of course, yes, yeah.
So he was happy he wasn't the consul general at the time,
Because
when
he
the
didn't
big
have to
boss.
worry about that.
Oh yeah, as you guys can all imagine, I hope you all appreciate when the president, which is your country's president, and you're the local foreign affairs folks in the country and city where you're stationed, and your big boss is coming. You can imagine the stress levels. I hope you appreciate that kind of stress levels that creates for the consul general and the staff. So, but he may be experiencing that, he thinks. We talk a little geopolitics, and one of the things that we don't see here easily, because it's not like we pay attention to that part of the world much, but Kim Jong-un, who's the dictator of North Korea, essentially, has made new BFF. His best friends forever is now Vladimir Putin over Xi Jinping in China. And you may be aware that Putin's buying a lot of old Cold War weapons from North Korea, because the supply of weapons in Russia has been slow in manufacturing, because they moved to a full-time war economy, which there are now, where every domestic manufacturing shifts to war mode. It takes time to shift. So they were buying a lot of North Korean weapons. I'm sure the North Koreans were compensated quite nicely for those weapons, and willing now become a satellite partner with Russia regarding financial assistance, essentially local aid for the country. Using oil money. And of course, they have oil and they need oil in North Korea. There is no fossil fuel opportunity. It's a mountainous region. And that's why they want nuclear reactors, one to terrorize everyone, but also because they need the energy. And nuclear power is something you have because they have no fossil fuels. They have no other renewable tech. They have no windmills, no solar panels. And that area is super cloudy. The wind's terrible. They have almost no coastal access for wind access to water. So they depend on fossil fuels, which they do not have any, because they don't have literally don't have any. And that's why this nuclear terror plus Russian partnership. And I had visited Korea, South Korea, on the diplomatic mission in 2014, as a guest of the South Korean government. And then I did visit the DMZ, which is remarkable. And one of the things they have on both sides of the DMZ is identical facing monuments. With peace, unity, and hope that there'll be one people, one Korean people on the peninsula. And the North Korea side has removed those monuments.
I see. Okay.
That is a problem. You all
Yes.
think, oh, it's just some monuments, took some signs down, big deal. No, it's a sign of political shift of foreign policy in North Korea regarding the attitude towards the southern neighbor. And also changes the communication of how you have to approach North Koreans, which is very hermit kingdom, you're kind of guessing. So it's easy to sit in our little chairs at home like this saying, oh, he's just a crazy dictator. No, he's not crazy. He has an agenda. It's just understanding what the agenda is. And 50 million people, in a vulnerable position, which you don't need modern weaponry. You can hit it from World War I weapons
Yeah.
to basically kill millions of people in one strike in a short time period. So,
People forget about the Korean War, but it was quite horrific.
oh, Korean War was very, very brutal. I know Korean War veterans are slowly passing away as we lose our greatest generation, but Korean War was very, very brutal. And a lot of Koreans died. A lot of Koreans, not military, but civilians all through the whole. And it's a country that has a huge U.S. military presence. It's the only U.S. military base on the Asian continent. Now that we've left Afghanistan, which is also on the Asian continent, second one was Afghanistan. And it's a huge security component, and they're a top five economy. So, and then maybe as you can hear earlier, the major trade partner to Massachusetts, not as well as the entire U.S. We talked a lot about that stuff. It's interesting to hear the perception of folks regarding what's actually going on the ground in those countries and how
Yes.
even domestic politics. So in parliamentary elections. They split us expecting perhaps a split situation where they have one party run parliament and the president of a separate party. Third parties have risen trying to disrupt the status quo. It's going to be interesting to see how that works. And they actually have impeached a president. We actually talked a bit about the last impeachment, where they actually did impeach and remove a president.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, she was very problematic of the corruption scheme,
I see.
and even her own party just abandoned her at one point. She was reached that level of intolerance, very different from Americans.
Yes.
The reason is very simple. It's because Koreans been under military dictatorship before they had a modern democracy. Modern democracy didn't actually occur until the 90s.
Right, and they
So,
don't want to go back there, I'm sure. So, yeah.
yeah, absolutely. That's why they have a one-term, five-year president. That's why there's a whole impeachment mechanism. They do have a criminal investigation, separately and all that. It is completely designed to prevent another military dictator.
No, that's right. Nobody in this country remembers British rule over the colonies.
That is true. It's been a long time since we had unseat someone else in charge of this country, right? In terms of just like, I'm going to do it my way and screw you people.
I think next year is the 250th anniversary of the revolution. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But South Korea has a government that's designed specifically, to prevent another military dictator. It works. And like I said, it became less about a political interests of parties and became an interest of security of the nation. And frankly, we could learn a lesson about that here.
We should probably comment, Tacky, on the passing of former Congressman William Delahunt this week.
Counselor, state rep, district attorney, and congressman. Bill was a remarkable figure in politics. Some younger folks may not remember him. But a lot of us in politics have at least spent a little bit of time, at the Bill Delahunt table to get some sound advice in politics with his experience over many years. Great place to learn how things work. I mean, he was a fountain of wisdom through his time. But he also knew it was time to call it quits. He didn't stay longer than he needed to. He knew when it was time to move on. And I think that's underappreciated today. He could have been a congressman to today. He chose those time, timeless time, and he moved on. In case you're wondering, he already had his pension from the district attorney's office, so he was not exactly motivated by a pension. And I know Congress pensions start much differently than state pensions. Much, not talking about it. He just left Congress because it was time.
Yeah, 2010, I think, so quite a while, yeah.
Did a decade. And he watched things change over that decade on the political environment in D.C. And I actually did ask him that question. He goes, "It's really kind of sad how that place has evolved from much more congenial, professional, high quality folks that understand the importance of relationship development to what you see now."
Well, I remember asking him about that, and he said we need Republicans in order to get things done. He understood the process.
And he was very worldly too. I mean, he did take the opportunity in D.C. as member of foreign affairs to go around the world talking to other leaders in other countries. And I think people here in Quincy realize that Congressman Lynch does the same thing. Congressman Keating does that as well, where they actually do travel and do learn from other countries and talk to other leaders in other countries. As you've seen, I've had the gracious opportunity of talking to foreign attachés that are stationed in Boston. But they actually got to go regularly with the State Department, representing our country, talking about legit issues that are affecting both nations, both domestically and internationally and bilaterally. So, Bill has a ton of experience understanding places like Cuba, for example. He has a full grasp of the Cuban people, as well as the government and the various dynamics that are involved. And that comes from a very, not just smart person, but a keen political mind to see all those moving parts. And, we're a people business. It's politics. And to understand how other government works, you have to understand politics, even though it's not my politics, it's not my government. But we have a background on dynamics. City government's not the same as state government, which is the same federal government, which is not the same as county government, right? So, just different principle. And he's had experience, counselor, state rep, district attorney, now Congress, right? He's actually worked in four levels of government in the United States. And you know, he was uniquely suited to see other folks in different countries and understand their government systems and the dynamics associated with it. And of course,
Yes.
he's a charitable person. I mean, he left Congress, made money, put a lot of money back in our communities.
And he gave me a behind the scenes tour of the Capitol once many, many, many years ago, and I got to see the revered Senate dining room.
Really?
Yes.
I have yet to visit the Capitol, actually.
It was an eye-opening tour. There are underground tunnels that connect all the federal office buildings throughout Washington, D.C. that he took me down in. So it was really fun.
I'm shameful to admit I've yet to visit the Capitol building.
It's really worth it, Jackie. If you ever get the opportunity, I'd highly recommend it.
Yeah, I gotta either get there. I gotta get there at some point somehow. As a child, I did visit D.C., but we've never made it into the Capitol. We did all the outdoor visits. We also
There's so
like,
much to see.
yeah, like we saw. I remember seeing money being printed to the Treasury, right? They have the like the super protected, invulnerable glass that you can see stuff happening. But yeah, I've never had a Capitol visit, so
It's well,
no.
and the Library of Congress also is a well worth your time. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's on my to-do list as well as other traveling. I will hopefully get a chance to enjoy at some point this year. But no, I'm gonna miss Bill. I'll miss Bill. I think the last time I saw Bill was Frank Bilotti's 100th birthday.
Oh, yep.
I remember seeing Bill at the dedication of the Denham Courthouse in his name,
Yeah, it's named in his honor. That's right.
in his honor. So I think it's also good when people name things after you are still alive. It's kind
That's right. What should we name after you, Jackie?
Well, again, my friends always joke, put my name on a porta potty, the official state porta potty. You can see the
We'll
host.
put it out on Wollaston Beach, Tacky's place.
You've heard me tell this joke a couple of times already on this podcast about my friend's respect for me regarding the fact that, like, you can travel with the state in your death. Stick your name in something mobile, like a porta potty, which is essential. So
Nice friends you have there.
they keep it real. I will not lie. I mean, one of the advantages of being a local politician is that you have local folks to keep you real. And there's no sucking up to appointment. And that's something we all need. We all need, friends that aren't afraid to just slap you every so often when you get a little ahead of yourself. I think hopefully you can tell from our conversations that, I do the job I need to do, and same as Bill. I mean, you had to be what you need to be to get the job done, but all the other times you are how you are. When you sit with Bill Delahunt, you just sit with Bill.
That's right. Yeah,
I'm gonna miss that.
that's a great way to describe it.
Yeah, I'm gonna miss that. And also, let's say he had revolutionary work in the DA's office. I mean, domestic violence in particular, civil rights. He was ahead of his time.
Oh yeah, it's Dove was a product of that.
Yeah, and then whole generation of folks won't know because the nature of our business, it's when time passes. Like I said, Bill was aware, very aware of that. When you're out, you're out, the expectation of a whole generation to know who you are is that's how this game works. You do what you can. Yeah.
For all of us though, right? We all want to try and just leave a little something better than when we first started.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm absolutely correct. I mean, I know we joked a little bit about the courthouse with him, but most of the stuff he's done, is not on his name on the courthouse. It's stuff that makes a quality of life better. That you never know where it came from. You assume it's always there.
That's right. That's right. It's a good way to end it today, I think, Tacky.
Yep, he's trying to remember his services. He's Church of the Presidents on Friday at 2 to 7,
2 to 7.
and his mass. That's on my
Is
calendar.
Saturday 11 at St. Gregory's in Dorchester, actually.
Yeah, St. Gregory's. It's on my calendar now. It's definitely part of my weekend travels. Also,
Perfect.
happy birthday to Marymount Association. Since let's go
Oh.
on another happy note, go on a happy note here. Happy birthday, Marymount Association. This Saturday is going to be the 100th birthday party. And also remind folks, your favorite podcast on Google is going away. Google is canceling the podcast service. If you haven't seen that notice enough, you get emails. Obviously, QATV is part of a podcast service, and I don't understand how to use YouTube music. I can't figure this thing out easily on getting to my podcast. But just a little reminder at the end of the show, if you're using Google Podcasts, I'm sure you see the banner up top, but just want to get reminded if you want to continue to listen to me and Joe, definitely switch to another podcast.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah, we're on all kinds of different platforms, so definitely.
Yep.
Okay, how
So,
do we get a hold of you, Jackie?
oh, do we have to get a hold of me?
Of course. Absolutely.
617-722-2370. 617-722-2370. It is Chairman Parasella's office. If the front desk doesn't pick up right away, you get the automated system. So please be aware that you hear Chairman Parasella, not Chairman Chan. So you have to wait to get through the prompts if the front desk doesn't pick up. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, Tackey at mahouse.gov. Even just the time that we've been chatting here, I've already received some 20-odd emails
Well,
just really quickly. So obviously we've hit that point where emails are coming hot and heavy regarding the budget. Stay with Tacky Chan on Facebook. This is how Joe knows where I am, so he can make questions about where I've been and why I'm doing what I'm doing. But it's also, some happy components to it. Student Government Day is this Friday, for example, right? We have a Quincy youth appointed to the Governor's Youth Council, for example. So, it brings a little bit of State House to you through State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook, as well as at tackychan.com. I'm sorry, .gov, at tackychan.gov, .gov.
dot org, I think.
.org. Lord have mercy. Lord have mercy. I'm getting confused.
It's all right, I got you covered.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. Tackychan.org is our resource page. Again, you find some phone numbers. And of course, malegislature.gov is the state website. Again, I strongly encourage people to visit the website. You can watch public hearings. You can watch the sessions. You can look up bills on your own. That website and my internal system was synced. There is what I see is what you see. So I have no special information that's not public already. And of course, we have at Tacky Chan on X. Did I mention that already? I'm getting,
Yes.
Joe, I've done this like literally like 300 times, and I still can't remember. Tell. And of course, QAT with Joe, which Joe can constantly correct me. Why don't you just tell everybody where I am, Joe? We've done this enough. On his Quincy in the AM, you get your 10-minute important liberal local stuff, as well as listen to Joe's many interviews. With not just me, but many other elected and law for profits and business leaders. And of course, Mark's in the next room getting the speaker. I think Joe's got a better deal today, just saying. Of course, I do end up on Mark Crosby as well. And that goes out to the entire, what do you call it, community television network. But
Yes.
we're immortal on YouTube and your favorite podcast station, so.
That's correct. We'll live on in infamy.
We're living immortally in this medium. So,
Thanks a lot, Tacky.
thank you, Joe. I'll catch you in a week.